Have you ever browsed in incognito mode? It's probably not as incognito as you think. Google recently settled a $5 billion lawsuit after being accused of secretly tracking users in incognito mode. Google's defense? Incognito does not mean invisible. In fact, all of your online activity is still 100% visible to a ton of third parties, unless you use ExpressVPN. Third parties like your internet service provider, your mobile network provider, and the admins of your Wi-Fi network, which could be your school, your boss, or your parents, can still see every website you visit, even in incognito mode, but not with ExpressVPN. They reroute all of your traffic through servers that are secure and encrypted, so nobody can poke around and see what you've been up to. ExpressVPN is ridiculously easy to use. It is literally one click and you're protected. It works on a ton of different devices, your phone, your laptop, your tablet, and more, so you can stay protected anywhere. And it's been rated as the best virtual private network by respected tech reviewers like The Verge and CNET. I don't like the idea of anyone spying on my internet activity for all kinds of reasons, so it's important to me personally to use ExpressVPN to make sure my online activity is my own. Here's an example. I recently used ExpressVPN to search for a gift for my wife because I don't want any unexpected ads to pop up across any of my devices and give away what I've been searching for. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film, and you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/film.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50. In order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, July 12th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
All right, Chris, let's get right into it here. We're just going to talk about what we've been watching recently on today's episode. I watched a movie called Call Northside 777 from 1948. Henry Hathaway directed this movie. Have you ever seen this by any chance?
I have not. I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
Very good. Jimmy Stewart is terrific in this movie, as usual. He plays a journalist in 1930s Chicago who is assigned to write a story about this classified ad that appears in the local paper, and a mother put this ad in the paper. She's offering $5,000 for information about the actual killers of a police officer that happened 11 years before, because her son was arrested for this crime and has been serving time in prison. And the mom is saying her son didn't do it. And Jimmy Stewart does not believe her at first. And he slowly comes to realize that maybe she's actually telling the truth. And the movie is basically like about this journey that his character goes on, turning from this cynical reporter into kind of a classical Jimmy Stewart archetype character who's fighting on behalf of the little guy and trying to do the right thing and all that. So it's very good. The movie was notable for being the first film, the first Hollywood film shot on location in Chicago. And the movie is based
really?
On... Yeah, yeah. And,
that's wild.
Yeah, it's very cool. And the movie was based on a true story, and they used a lot of the actual locations from the real story when they were making the movie. Good stuff. It's available to rent right now. It's called Call Northside 777, which is like the information that is put in the ad. I was like, what a weird title. What even is that? And I guess that's the address where the mom lives, and like that was part of the ad in the paper. Like, if you have information, call me at this number kind of thing. So... anyway, that's that. I also watched Marie Antoinette from 2006, Sofia Coppola's movie. Have you seen this?
Yes, I have.
What did you think about it? I'm kind of torn here.
You know, I did not like it when it first came out. I saw it when it first came out. And this is one of those movies where it had like an amazing trailer. I don't know if you've seen the trailer, but the trailer.
I haven't.
The trailer is so good. And I was like, holy shit, this is going to be like the best movie ever made. And then I saw it and I was like, I don't really like this that much. And I watched it years later and I liked it a lot more the second time I saw it. So I don't know if it's like a thing of like, I got older and appreciated it more. I don't know, but I did not really love it when I first saw it.
Yeah, I was not a Kirsten Dunst fan in 2006. So I never saw it at all. And this was my first time seeing the movie. And I feel like I missed something. Like I clocked the connective tissue of young women being put on display and constantly being judged by society and how alienating that can be. But I'm not sure if Sofia Coppola was trying to draw any other parallels between, I don't know, life or like what it's like to be a woman in the 1770s versus what it's like in 2006. I kind of feel like I missed a little bit of what she was going for here, but I still enjoyed it. Like the cast is great. And there are a few shots that look like Barry Lyndon. There's just like these incredibly composed, beautiful the cinematography is amazing. And you can tell that Coppola deeply cared about every tiny detail that we see in every frame of this movie. So I still enjoyed it, even though I feel like maybe I missed out on something. So if anybody has any thoughts about, you know, the larger messages of Marie Antoinette, feel free to write in. I would love to hear those. This movie is streaming on Pluto TV, so people can check that out there if they're interested. I saw a double feature of two movies that are in theaters right now that have a little bit of thematic connectivity, I would say. So the first one is called Kill, which is an Indian action movie that's basically like What If the Raid, but on a train. And the second one is Horizon, an American Saga, Chapter One, the new Kevin Costner Western. And the connective tissue I found between both of these movies is kind of like about cycles of violence and like what one violent action can beget and the incredible consequences of the cyclical nature of revenge and all of that kind of stuff, because both of these stories deal with those in pretty meaningful ways. Kill is like, I don't think there's very much going on here on a deeper level. It's very like action forward, action friendly. Like if you love martial arts movies, if you love stuff like The Raid or John Wick, you're probably going to get a lot out of this because there's some pretty incredible action. But I kind of felt like the movie ran out of steam by the end because there's only so much you can do in the confines of a train when it comes to bashing dudes' heads into different parts of the train and using, you know, whatever limited props are available to you. Just the confined nature of the space kind of provides these guardrails that doesn't really allow for like a lot of, creativity outside of maybe what you would expect of some of these major action set pieces. But you know, still kind of like a fun time on that front. So if you're interested in that type of martial arts cinema or whatever, there's not even really that many like amazing martial arts moments. It's mostly just like hardcore action, I guess I would call it. And check out Kill. Horizon is Chris, this is such a weird movie. Like, do you have interest in seeing this?
I do. I kind of regret not seeing it yet. But there's, it's like, man, 3 fucking hours.
I know.
It's like, you really got to come, especially with like, I don't know what theater you usually go. I'm assuming you usually go to like AMCs.
Or something. There's an AMC near me. Yeah.
Like, I don't know about you, but AMC near me, they have about like 40 minutes of pre-show time.
Mine, like, I've timed it. I've got it down where it's basically 23 minutes every time. So I walk in at like 20 minutes after the start time and only really have to sit through maybe one trailer or something.
Yeah,
40 minutes is insane, Chris.
It's like you get a bunch of like TV spot or like commercials and then you get trailers. And it's like, I know I could show up late, but like I have this thing where like I need to, it's like, I don't know if it's like obsessive compulsive or what, but like I need to be on time. And even if the seats are assigned, which they usually are in AMCs, I need to get there at the exact start time. Like my mind won't let me get there late. So I get there, like the movie says it's starting at like 6:30. I get there at 6:30. And then the movie itself won't really start until like 7:10. So it's like you throw that in, it's like 4 hours at the movies. And it's like, man, I don't know if I want to do that. Like, there's very few filmmakers I will do that for. Like, I'll do it for Martin Scorsese, but I don't know if I'll do it for Kevin Costner. But long story short, I do want to see this because I like Kevin Costner. I like Westerns. And, you know, I like the idea of this experiment. But no, yeah. I have not gotten around to seeing it.
God, 40 minutes. Like, Congress needs to do something about this.
It should be illegal. It really should. Like, if Joe Biden came out today and said, I'm getting rid of trailers, I would, like, he would win in a landslide. There's your answer, Mr. Biden. Please, you need to come back. Speak out against AMC theaters.
Yeah, there you go. Horizon is just a deeply weird film because in many ways, it feels like TV, and I know a lot of people have been saying this, but like the structure of the movie kind of lends itself to that comparison because it's 3 hours long and there are, I don't know, 4 or 5 major plot lines or something. And kind of like each one gets a huge chunk of time all at once. And then it cuts to another story and that one gets a huge chunk of time and then another one. So it kind of has this episodic feel to it. And there is a little bit of cross-cutting and intercutting between these stories, but for the most part, it really feels like the first part of this movie, there's this big siege on a Native American tribe attacks a frontier settlement. And it's like, it feels like a 30-minute sequence or something. And so when that's over, and the aftermath of that is over, and then it cuts to something else, it kind of feels like you've just watched the episode of Game of Thrones where the White Walkers storm the Winterfell or whatever, like at the very end of that show. So like, I don't know, it's very strange the way that it's structured. It feels very, very old school in that way. I have seen some people complain that like nothing really happens in this movie because it is a setup for future films. I don't agree with that at all. I feel like a lot happens in this movie and each of these stories is like entertaining on their own merits and on their own levels. The little episodes that I'm talking about, it's kind of like the experience of reading a book of short stories where like some of them are more entertaining to me than others. But, you know, I can't say that I didn't like the experience of watching the movie. It is very long and you kind of feel that at the end. But Jamie Campbell Bauer is really good in this. He plays Vecna in the later seasons of Stranger Things. And he plays a villain character in this. And he's like really slimy and easy to hate and very entertaining to watch on that level. But yeah, there's like good actors doing good work in this movie. There's some of it looks fantastic. You know, if this was a thing where it was like, I guess the larger meta story is just so much more interesting than the actual narrative that we see happen in this movie, just because it's so unusual for a major director to invest $38 million of their own money into this and like all the outside stuff about it. And like the movie is not doing very well. And then it was pulled. The second one was pulled from theaters earlier this week. And it's just like, so there's so much drama around all of that like, it's hard for the actual movie itself to be able to compare to the drama that's going on outside of it. But I'm curious. I will probably continue to watch whatever Other chapters end up coming down the pike for this thing. But I'd be really curious to hear what you think about it, Chris, if you think it's like just a failed experiment or if you actually think it might be like a secret masterpiece or somewhere in between. So let me know if you get a chance to watch it in, you know, one of these days.
Yeah.
Although I do think they said that it's coming to digital on like July 16th or something, like very soon.
Yeah, so it's going to end up on Max too. So I'll probably watch it when it ends up on there.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so that's Kill and Horizon and American Saga Chapter 1. Both of those are in theaters right now. And then the last thing that I wanted to mention is a movie called Black Moon Rising from 1986. I had never heard of this in my life. Have you seen this, Chris?
I haven't. I have heard of it because I remember seeing the cover, which is like a drawing of Tommy Lee Jones's face with like an explosion or something, but I've never actually seen the movie.
Yes. If you look at the poster, it's very weird because it doesn't even really look like Tommy Lee Jones. It almost looks like Tommy Lee Jones mixed with Clint Eastwood or something. But anyway, the movie's called Black Moon Rising. Tommy Lee Jones plays a professional thief named Sam Quint, who is hired by the FBI to steal some evidence that some company has been committing crimes or something. That part is not really important. What is important is some guys separately are testing an experimental car that can drive upwards of 300 miles an hour.
Oh, hell yeah. This sounds amazing.
And it's 1986, so you know that car looks like futuristic, you know, quasi, you know, like really.
I'm looking at pictures of the car now and it looks so fucking cool. It's yeah. Like, yes.
Yeah, this movie is like aesthetically a dream because Tommy Lee Jones is just like walking around in a leather jacket and jeans and the whole movie just is cool as hell. So Sam Quint steals this evidence and for plot reasons, he has to hide the evidence inside this experimental car. And then that car is stolen by another thief who is played by Linda Hamilton. And she is like the head of a car stealing syndicate that is overseen by this corrupt businessman who's played by Robert Vaughn. Very, very entertaining. And the whole thing culminates with this set piece that shows up on the poster and in the box art and all this. So I don't feel too bad about spoiling this because I think maybe describing this will get more people to watch this movie. So this corrupt businessman operates out of two newly built high-rise towers in the middle of Los Angeles. And one of these buildings is completed and it has tons of security measures and all of that. And that's where the car is being held. But the other building is still under construction. So the whole back half of this movie turns into a heist film where Sam Quint and these car guys figure out how to break into the second building and sort of like rope their way across to the main building and steal the car back so Quint can get his evidence that he needs. And of course, things go wrong in the main building. And in this big set piece, the movie culminates with this gigantic set piece where it looks like Quint and Linda Hamilton, who is now on his side, are cornered. And they escape by driving the car out of the 50th floor of one building and crashing into the other building, which is a stunt that was copied by James Wan in Furious 7. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm seeing this. The people who made Furious 7 must have been aware of Black Moon Rising, this obscure 1980s sci-fi action thriller, who's directed by a guy that I've never heard of in my life named Harley Kokelis. But this movie was written by John Carpenter, Chris. I had no idea. So
really? I didn't know that either. Hey, this sounds like the coolest movie ever made. I gotta see this.
On some level, it is. But on another level, it's kind of like just a cheesy 80s action movie. But I have to say, right, if you're in the mood for that, this really, really scratches that itch. It is very fun. And it's streaming right now on Tubi and Pluto TV. So if people want to check that out, it's very easy and free to do that. So Black Moon Rising is the name of the movie.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need to work quickly and confidently, you need Grammarly. It's a trusted AI writing partner that helps you get work done faster with better writing. And it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What have you been watching, Chris?
All right. So earlier this week, I finally got to see Long Legs, which is a film I feel like everyone has already seen already because Neon has been pushing it for like 2 months now and giving like super early screenings to people. And
I'm seeing it tonight. So don't spoil it for me.
I will not spoil it for you. I will say I do think, unfortunately, this is a case of a movie being really overhyped. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I don't think it's a bad movie at all. But the hype for this movie is like through the friggin' roof. And like when you read people's reactions, they're like, this movie chilled me to the bone and I haven't slept in months. And it's like, all right, like, you know what? Let's calm down. Like this movie has great atmosphere. It's got like an amazing atmosphere. It's just like filled with like dread. And it is definitely a creepy movie, but the more I sit with it, the less I like it, because it's got this really almost nonsensical script. And I can get down with movies that don't make sense. And I feel like part of this is intentional because the movie is kind of like invoking a nightmare, and nightmares don't always make sense. But the more you like sit with it and the more you think about like the various plot points, you start to be like, well, what? Like, I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's like, this makes absolutely, like, why is this happening? Why are certain characters doing this? And it really starts to kind of fall apart the more you think about it, at least for me, you know? And I'm really kind of bummed out about this because I was so excited to see this. The hype really got to me. I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to see this movie. Because I like, this movie is directed by Oz Perkins, who's made a few horror movies already. He made a movie called I Am the Pretty Things that Lives in the House. That's on Netflix. He made Gretel and Hansel, which was like a flop that I thought was really good and deserved better. He made The Black Coat's Daughter. And I've liked all these movies. So I was really looking forward to this. And, you know, Nick Cage is in. I love me some Nick Cage. And Nick Cage is going like full gonzo mode in this. So if you want to see Nick Cage do his crazy Nick Cage thing, you're going to get that. But I just wish I had liked this more than I did. You know, I don't want to say I didn't like it, because I enjoyed watching it, but I was a little let down.
So do you have any concerns about the fact that Oz Perkins, the director, is also working on an adaptation of a Stephen King short story called The Monkey that's coming out in February?
No, you know, I'm looking forward to that because I do think he's a really good filmmaker. Like the direction in the filmmaking on display in this movie is great. Like there's a lot of like wide shots that really do a good job invoking dread because like you're constantly like looking around the frame and being like, well, so I'm going to pop into the frame. And even though that's not what happens, you're like constantly on edge. And so I'm really curious to see what he does with the monkey, which is a very silly Stephen King story about a toy monkey that claps its cymbals and people die. It's very silly. So I'm interested to see how the movie turns out.
Okay. Yeah, typically, like on these Friday episodes, I try to have spoiler discussions about whatever big movie is coming out this week, but I wasn't able to see Long Legs last night, and we don't have any interviews for it or anything. So maybe next week you and I can get together on the podcast, Chris, and talk about the ending openly after people have a chance to see it, because I'm so curious about why it didn't work for you maybe as well as you would have hoped. But speaking of, or I guess on the opposite end of that spectrum, a movie that I think did work very well for you, you just saw The Bike Riders recently, right?
Yeah, The Bike Riders is out on digital now, which it was in, I think it's still in theaters too, but it had a very short exclusive window, which is depressing, but that's the world we live in right now. And I absolutely loved this. This really, really impressed me. I do think the trailers kind of sucked for this. Like I went and saw Love Lies Bleeding when it came out, and it was a packed theater, and they showed the trailer for this before this. And when the title came up, someone in the audience was like, "The Bike Riders," like in this really derogatory way. And the entire theater burst out laughing. And I was just like, I felt like embarrassed for the movie. I was just like, boy, no one wants to see this. So I do think the trailers were not great, but the movie itself is fantastic. So it's set in the 60s and the 70s, and it's about this motorcycle club. Tom Hardy, doing one of his weird voices, plays the guy who starts the motorcycle club. And it's this really interesting thing where it's like, it's this commentary on like masculinity and posturing. And like the movie shows you that the reason Tom Hardy starts the motorcycle club is because one day he's watching TV and he sees the Marlon Brando movie, The Wild One, which mm-hmm. is about like a motorcycle gang. And he's like, I want to start a motorcycle gang. And it's like, that's such like a funny idea that this guy, cause he's like a married guy with a wife and kids. And you know, like he, one day he just starts this tough motorcycle club cause he saw a Marlon Brando movie. And that's such like a fascinating idea to me that like this guy starts this tough motorcycle club cause he saw a movie.
Yeah.
And yeah. And so he runs the club. Austin Butler is a guy who's in the gang, and Jodie Comer plays a woman who falls in love with Austin Butler, and they get married. And the whole movie is narrated by Jodie Comer's story, Jodie Comer's character, because she's telling the story to a journalist played by Mike Faced. And the whole movie has this sort of like Goodfellas quality, the way it's edited, the way it has this narration. And it's just like I really dug this. I like Jeff Nichols movies in general, so I wasn't expecting to dislike it, but I liked it a lot more than I really thought I was going to. It's like, this is like going to be on my like best of the year list. I love it.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, I was curious what you thought of it, because that Goodfellas comparison is one that a lot of people have been making, and it's like so overt that I know how highly you hold Goodfellas in your own esteem. So I was wondering if those comparisons might rub you the wrong way or something, but it sounded like it actually worked for you.
It did. You know, I feel like it could have gone very wrong, because it's very easy to rip off Goodfellas. Goodfellas is like one of the most influential movies ever made, and people are constantly ripping it off because why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you rip off one of the best movies ever made? But Jeff Nichols, the editing, the way he edits it really, really like makes it work. Like the narration isn't corny. It serves the narrative. The movie is really punchy. Like the opening like hour is just like fantastic. It's just like moving at this really fast pace. And then it sort of slows down. I love everything everyone is doing here. I love Tom Hardy's weird voice. I really love Jodie Comer's doing this like Chicago accent that just is fantastic. And Austin Butler is doing his Austin Butler thing. Everyone is just doing really good work in this movie. Michael mm-hmm. Shannon shows up, and I don't know, it's just like a really good actor showcase. I really dug this.
Yeah, it felt like a throwback of like the types of movies we used to get back in our day. You know,
yes, what I mean? The good old days.
Yeah. Okay, what else have you been watching, Chris?
I finally saw Abigail, which I did not like at all, I'm sorry to say.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah. And I'm really bummed out about this because I really like Radio Silence, the directing team that made Ready or Not. They made two of the new Scream movies. I love Ready or Not. I think Ready or Not is fantastic. So I went into this excited, and I really didn't care for this. It's not like terrible. It's just like, I was just like, boy, this is not working for me on any level. Like the humor is really bad. Like the jokes don't land at all. The child actress I found to be like insufferable. That could just be me.
No.
That could just be me. I don't like kids. I really don't like children. And like there are some child actors who are good and they do a good job. And I'm not gonna like harp too much on this child act because like she's a kid. She's doing the best she can. But like every scene with her where she's just like saying curse words and stuff and showing her vampire teeth, I'm just like, yes.
Like generally I'm right there with you when it comes to child actors. I didn't have that much of a problem with her performance or anything, but so just in case people haven't seen this movie and are like judging solely on that quality or whatever, I would say it's probably more of like a your mileage may vary on that particular performance. But like the tone and stuff, the excessive amounts of gore, like none of that really worked for you, Chris?
It was fine. It just, I don't know, like it just feels very much like it's a movie from the guys who made Ready or Not, and I'd rather be watching Ready or Not. Like that felt like even the people like exploding into like buckets of blood is in Ready or Not, and it's better in that. Like, I don't know, I would just rather watch that again than see this.
Yeah, that's fair. I think, I wonder, we'll never know, but in the alternate universe where the vampire reveal was not given away in all of the marketing, I just have to wonder if that would have been a more enjoyable experience for people who watched it in theaters and then even people who maybe just like stumbled across it later and like didn't realize that. Because as it stands right now, you're just like sitting there waiting until that reveal happens. And it feels like such a big chunk of the movie that is just kind of like treading water until you get to the real story, you know? So
yeah.
Anyway, I think I liked it quite a bit more than you did, but yeah, Abigail, your mileage may vary on that one. So all right, last thing that you saw, Chris, what is it?
I finally saw Alex Garland's Civil War, and I liked this. I know this is a polarizing movie. A lot of people have a problem with the fact that the movie is like almost like insanely neutral. It doesn't take sides. It deliberately does not take sides. It also doesn't really like tell you much about the Civil War, like why it's happening, but like none of that bothered me. Like the neutrality is like clearly by design because the characters are supposed to be neutral because they don't care about taking, like there's even dialogue in the film where they talk about this, where they're not there to take sides. They're there just to get the story or get the picture or whatever. And it's about journalists traveling across America in the final days of a new Civil War. And I thought this was just very interesting because a lot of interviews beforehand, Alex Garland was like, this is a tribute to journalists. But if anything, to me, this movie kind of implies that to be a journalist, to be like at least like a frontline war journalist, you kind of have to be almost like a sociopath in the sense that you have to like completely remove yourself from any sort of emotion, because the minute you show emotion, I don't want to spoil anything for you, but like the minute you like show emotion, it's going to affect you in a bad way. And it's, so if anything, this seems like not really a tribute to journalists. It seems like the movie is saying like good journalists have no emotions at all, which seems kind of like, maybe it's true, but that does not seem like a good thing. It just seems like it is what it is. But, I mean, this is it's an upsetting movie. The final like half hour had my heart palpitating. I was just like, Jesus Christ. Like, I can't believe this is going where it's going. And this really worked for me. I understand why people don't like it. And I wouldn't be like, you're wrong for not liking it. But I think it works.
Man, this movie is so tense. Like, what did you think about the Jesse Plemons sequence?
God, that scene is so good. Oh my God. I wrote a thing about that actually this week on Slash Film. Like, I wrote about like the behind the scenes of it. But Jesse Plemons shows up for one scene and he just kills it, man. I honestly think he's one of our best working actors, but he does so much with so little in this moment. Like, he's, you know, he's this racist soldier guy, and it's like, it's so tense, but it's also like darkly funny the way he plays it. Like, there's this part where he's like, the scene in question is like the journalists, they get taken hostage by the soldier character, and he's like, who do you write for? And they're like, we write for Reuters. And he's like, Reuters doesn't sound American to me. And they're trying to explain it. And he's like, I know what Reuters is. And like, I was just like I was laughing despite myself because it's so goddamn tense, but you can't help but laugh at the way he like plays the scene. It's like a masterclass in like having a scene and making the most of it. It reminded me of have you ever seen Network?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, it reminded me, like, in that movie, there's a one scene where Ned Beatty shows up, and he's in one scene, and he absolutely kills it. And he actually, like, won the Oscar for this, or he got nominated for it. And he's only in the movie for, like, 5 minutes. And it's, like, it's the same sort of thing, where Jesse Plemons shows up one scene, and it kind of, like, just steals the entire movie, where he just has this one moment, and it's so good.
Yeah, man, this movie is like, yeah, it's lingered with me for sure. I know a lot of people have a lot of issues with it, but I think if absolutely nothing else, we'll definitely be arguing for some moments from this film to appear on our big like best movie moments of the year podcast when we do that in January. So
I just looked it up. Ned Beatty was nominated but did not win. So no one write in and say I was wrong because I looked it up.
Okay, cool. I'm trying to think if there's the Jesse Plemons thing. Yeah, it reminds me of like the way that people talk about Philip Seymour Hoffman now, where after he died, everybody's like, oh, he was the best and he was like one of our greatest actors. And like, I don't know, I know people, I'm not trying to accuse anybody of like being performative in their love for Philip Seymour Hoffman. Like, obviously he was great and people liked him a lot when he was still alive. But I feel like there is this thing, it's been crystallized, you know, like his legacy has been crystallized in the wake of his death. And I just hope that enough people like and are vocal about liking Jesse Plemons' work where it doesn't take something like that for everybody to agree that he is like one of the greats, you know, working right now. So
absolutely.
Anyway, I'm not trying to be morbid, and I hope Jesse Plemons lives a long and healthy and happy life.
So. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's as good a way to end the show as any. That's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. I will actually link to that story that Chris mentioned that he wrote this week about Civil War. So if you want to check that out, you can find it easily there. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all next week.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.